Chris Payson from Athens with Ghosts from his Ornetticut album on WGXC.
Congressman Delgado, are you with us?
I am.
Oh, wonderful. All see, right. We said we shall overcome. So glad that you were able to hang in there and with us. And I have your good friend and mine, Mr. Randall Martin, in on this call with us as well. We're just excited for the few
Excellent.
Minutes that
Hello,
you
Congressman.
Have to be with us.
All right. How you doing?
I'm well.
So, you know, we know that you're quite busy and doing some important things. And, you know, we're very appreciative that you have these few moments to talk with us. And, you know, I wanted to talk about a couple of things that you've been working on. And so I want to give you a chance to say something about that. But, of course, I want to say something about the State of the Union yesterday. So we got a few minutes, about 6 minutes left to do this, get these two in. But so, Congressman, I know that you put forth a bill. And shout out to you for your bill that you put out there. And so I want you to, and also you co-sponsored. I mean, you've been busy. You've only been in office less than a month or about a month, and you've been busy at work
Yes.
for the people. And so can you tell the people about why you worked on this particular bill and also maybe something about one or two that you were very passionate about and you co-sponsored?
Yeah, I mean, well, a number of issues are of my focus, things that are I talked about a lot over the last couple of years, from healthcare to rural broadband to water contamination issues. You know, these are all very important infrastructure, but, you know, you can only control what you can control, and certainly wanted to make sure that I can focus on legislation that can move through the House and potentially through the Senate. And there were a couple of things early on that I was able to introduce, specifically the very first bill that I introduced, the Service Disabled Veterans Small Business Continuation Act, a bipartisan bill, the first bipartisan bill I was able to introduce, and my very first bill, extends benefits to the spouses of service disabled veterans, which to me is very important. Also jumped on and introduced a standalone bill called the CLEAR Act, which is a part of H.R. 1, Historic Government Reform. And there, the point is to make sure that lobbyists who donate or contribute to candidates are disclosed on FEC reports. Currently, they are not disclosed on FEC reports. With all the money that is saturating into our politics and creating a real imbalance between corporations and working folk, I thought it was imperative that we shed some light on who, in fact, is pulling the strings behind the scenes. So very proud of that. With all the issues going around with water contamination and PFAS and the EPA's unwillingness to set max limits, as so it's reported, I also am putting forth legislation to identify PFAS, a really harsh contaminant, one that has caused death and health outcomes in my district, New Hoosick Falls specifically, to make sure that the chemical is recognized as a hazardous substance so that the EPA can clean up the chemical on Superfund sites. I've been busy. You know, that's just a few things that I've been able to get involved in. The Disability Integration Act, another bill that I've co-sponsored, and continue to do the work as we move forward. And excited to keep working.
Well, you know, I was reading up on you and the things that you've been working on, and I'm very grateful. I work alongside with the head of the Veterans Affairs here in our county, in Columbia County, and I know, you know, all the work that he puts in, he and his wife put into, you know, working for our veterans, and certainly, you know, we do have some really good programs, and I give a shout out to the veteran workers. So glad that you're, you know, putting this bill forth and have introduced this bill, and also dealing with our environment and all of those matters. So yeah, and you know, whatever we need to do and can do, because like I heard you say that you work on those legislations that you, you know, are pretty sure that you can get some bipartisan support and get into the mix. And so whatever you need us to do, please let us know. Which brings me to my next thing, is the State of the Union address last night. And I read that the president talked about creating more jobs and opportunities with the industries that are going to be necessary for the future. And so here again, you know, along with your work in infrastructure and transportation, you know, the committees that you're on, are there any things that we should be, you know, looking at, talking about, you know, working with you towards to make sure that, you know, our district is on par with that focus?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, one of the things, and the president did speak about this, and I think it's important that we pursue this, we have to upgrade our infrastructure, you know, from roads to rail to broadband access and quality cell service are critically important. Water infrastructure is very much a need, and making sure that we are investing in renewable energy sources and investing in energy efficient efficiency technology. This is the wave of the future. This is how we can create jobs. All the economic growth lies in a concerted effort to deal with the climate change crisis by reducing carbon emissions and by making our technology function in a way that is more energy efficient. Those are all the, that's where all the jobs are. So whether it's roads, whether it's rail, whether it's green oriented jobs, we have to really be doubling down our investment for what the future can look like for long lasting, sustainable jobs. So I do hope that we can pass legislation that meets this need. I do sit on the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. There will be a lot of legislation coming out of that committee, and I'm excited to get to work. You know, without this kind of infrastructure, particularly when it comes to rural broadband and rail and public transportation, we lack the ability to access markets. You know, our district is, what, 2.5 hours north of one of the biggest places in the world in terms of markets. Millions of people that we can be accessing to supply, you know, what we can build and what we can create in our district, and yet we don't have the infrastructure to tap into that. So it's very important that we double down on that, and I'm excited to get to work doing it.
Well, I'm excited about it, too, and this is, brings me to my next point. I got one more I hope you can hold on there for, which is when these contracts and these opportunities open up, you know, oftentimes the players that have been playing in the game already, the big wigs, the pay-to-play people, they get the opportunities. They get the contracts. They get the monies. Are there going to be any new departments or persons that are going to be working with people who want to come in to this and create new opportunities and new jobs for our communities? Because, you know, a lot of times Black American communities, people of color, we're new in this game and we get left out or we get pushed out. So I don't know if you have an answer for that.
I can't say that there's anything specific, but I think it's certainly an issue and one that I'm mindful of. And I do think that as funding is doled out, there certainly should be a fair and open bidding process, and there certainly should be a lot of thought given to how historically certain communities have been left out of that process. And to the extent that we can address that, I think we ought to. So I definitely understand your point of view, and I'm with you on that. And I think ultimately, you know, the issue is that we have an opportunity to make bold investment across the board here, which should have a meaningful impact, and particularly with minority-owned, women-owned businesses, you know, we could be focusing on and should be focusing on making sure that we're empowering those communities, no question.
All right. Well, you heard it here. You heard it here. One last point that I want to raise, and this is of concern. A couple of weeks ago, we had the longest government shutdown in history. People went for a month without getting paid, and you know all about those stories. And here we are on countdown to February 15th. I don't know what it is with this president, but it seems like holidays irk him. You know, now we have this hallmark holiday of Valentine's Day, and he's talking about shutting it down again the day after Valentine's Day. Well, that might put a damper on some people's holiday Valentine plans. But Senator Cory Booker, he made a comment, and he said that there is more power in the people than people in power. And so what can we, the people, really do? Because rallies and marches and protests and, you know, things like that, they're working on the state and local levels, but not so much with this president. What can we who have power as the power of the people, what do you think we might be able to do to help prevent, or do we just need to prepare for another government shutdown and a long government shutdown?
Well, I mean, I think it's always important to engage your representatives and to push your friends across the country to engage theirs, particularly those individuals who are sitting in districts where the representative has indicated an unwillingness to sign on to legislation for the purpose of opening the government. The more pressure we put on our legislative body across the country, the better. People do not want to be on the wrong side of an issue, and it's important that they understand that they are on the wrong side of an issue, and the only way they can understand that is if their constituents communicate that to them early and often. So I would just encourage people to not get discouraged, to write letters, to make phone calls, and to continue to hold their respective elected officials' feet to the fire. I think if we continue to do that, we'll be okay.
Well, you know what? I appreciate you. Now, you didn't hear it from me. You heard it from the congressman that we sent to represent us in Washington, D.C. Congressman, we're about 10 seconds to count down. We're going to have you come back again because we're not going to have a time to do a shout out. But I want to shout you out. They're going to cut us off in 9, 10.
I appreciate it.
Thank you and much continued success.
Care.
We're here for you. God bless you.
Take care. God bless you.
Thank you.
I'm in the Capital Region for some advocacy in relation to the Williams Pipeline, part of the Williams Coalition to stop the pipeline. So we'll be delivering petitions tomorrow. And yesterday I was with the coalition New York Renews, where we got elected John Liu to sign on in support of the CCPA. So that was pretty exciting. And I thought, why not stay here since I have to work up here twice? And I've heard lovely things about Troy through a farming program, the Black and Latinx Farmers Program, Soulfire. So I was like, Troy sounds lovely. I think I'll stay over here rather than directly downtown.
Cool. Well, we're going to want to get into some of those things you just threw out so casually, as though everybody knows. But let's start by something by talking about something that folks probably know but may not. What is 350.org?
350.org is a global climate organization that works across the globe to address issues of climate justice and also works to build multiracial movements to address climate issues in different places around the world. So I work out of New York City, and before this I was working in California.
Interesting. When you say it's a global organization, that implies, well, global scale. How many people are involved working with 350.org? Do you know, approximately?
Yeah, a lot. I'm actually, I just started in this region in November, and I'll get to meet the North American team in San Francisco on Sunday. And then we'll be meeting as a global crew later in the spring. So that's kind of exciting.
Are folks mostly paid, or is it internships, volunteers, or all of the above?
Paid.
Cool.
And many, many volunteers. They're great at mobilizing people, really great at digital work.
Okay. So I'm a little bit of a bureaucracy wonk, so I'm going to just detour for a moment, and maybe you could explain how does 350.org organize in the United States? Are there regions? And just real quickly, how does that look? The reason I ask is something brought you here to Troy, something about your organization. How does it look? What made that happen?
Sure. So, I mean, I think that's partially, like I said, my personal activism in farming and the arts, that I knew that Troy was a special place that had farmers and artists. So personally, I knew that I could come here and find some community for myself. And then the kind of bigger target was I have to be in Albany to do advocacy and lobbying, more specifically tied to my job, air quotes.
And that's based in New York City, you said?
Yes. Uh-huh.
And so it's great that you decided to come here. Soulfire is awesome. And we just had a premiere of Leah Penniman's new book, Farming While Black, here, which was really a great evening. So you're amongst friends. you mentioned the Williams Pipeline. What's happening with that? I'm not that familiar with it.
So the Williams Corporation is a multi-billion dollar corporation with a very bad safety track record. And they have proposed to build a loop pipeline off of the Rockaways, Coney Island, and New Jersey. And that's in response to Con Edison saying that their network needs gas. And so the government then has responded and said, if Con Ed says they need gas, then we need to build this pipeline. The FERC released its report recently saying that that's why this is needed, because it Con Edison says they need gas, so we must respond as the government to this corporation's need. Very dangerous. And they also have said that while there are environmental impacts that are concerning, the measures that the corporation says they will take to mitigate it are fine. So a lot of submitting to the corporations, what they say they will do to mitigate and what they say they need from the government, which is very dangerous for, you know, people that believe in democracy and not in corporations leading things, besides the element of climate justice and impacted and how this will impact vulnerable communities in the Rockaways and Staten Island that have already gone through climate catastrophes such as Sandy. So a lot of concerning elements.
So when you talk about a gas pipeline, are we talking about liquid gas, vapor, gas vapor? Is it petroleum? Is this fracked oil?
Yes.
Essentially. So what form does that take in the pipeline?
I'm not sure. I wouldn't be able to answer that question, but I know that this is something that isn't, this is fracked gas, and that's not something that that we need. There's no reason to have that when we have things like the CCPA.
What is the CCPA?
The Community Protection Act that we were lobbying for yesterday with New York Renews. The entire state, and Cuomo has his own gestures towards trying to move towards, you know, a more renewable New York State, which are not at all as strong as what the CCPA is putting forward. But you have all of these gestures from different politicians saying, we know that we need to do something to address the climate crisis. So why is another pipeline, you know, about to go through with fracked gas that contributes to climate catastrophes such as Sandy? So there's no reason to have this pipeline. Yeah, and that's our local issue in New York City. So something that I will be working on across the state is town halls to bring people together around local issues across the state, where folks can kind of press local electeds on issues that they're dealing with, climate issues that they're dealing with. So that is a local issue that we're dealing with in New York City. And our town hall in New York City is going to be March 20th, 7 to 9 p.m. at the Society for Ethical Culture. And we're going to be doing a big art build for it on the 13th at Mayday Space from 6 to 9 p.m. So that's our New York City town hall kind of kickoff, and then we'll also be having town halls across the state, and that's something to be decided and announced. I'm excited and look forward to working with folks across the state and local regions, so that's part of the reason why I'm excited to be here as well, to get to talk with you and with other local folks working on issues here to see, you know, what would work here, what are people interested in and excited to have a town hall around, what kind of who are the electeds that people would like to interview and press to understand what they are doing in service of the planet, in service of the people in these communities, and also personally excited to bring arts engagement to each of these town halls across the state.
So we're speaking with Kata Romo, who's here representing the organization 350.org. It seems that New Yorkers are in kind of a unique situation in that we're not confronted by having to fight the extraction of fracked gas in this state. But if people were reassured by that a few years ago, suddenly we've become the transportation hub for fracked gas, which comes right through Albany. Is that the key part of your organizing, to deal with the transportation infrastructure for these energy products?
Mostly yes and no, but a key part of my organizing is to work with communities and get to know folks across the state. So I have a lot of personal interests in arts engagement and in working with youth, and so those are places that I kind of start out with when I go to different communities. But the main things that I'm focusing on are, like I said, getting communities, talking to different folks to see what makes sense in each different region across the state for kind of a gathering town hall type of situation where folks can kind of bring in an elected official, ask questions, and also think of like what creative things are people already working on in a specified region, and how can folks local creative skills be used to amplify local climate issues and tell that story in a better way. So that's kind of what I will be working on across the state, is that. So if, I'm not sure how far your broadcast reaches, but if folks are interested in different, you know, regions across the state in terms of Buffalo or Ithaca, the Albany region, I mean, I would love for them to reach out to me and, you know, work together to kind of develop these town halls and bring some more awareness and more pressure to our electeds to get moving on these issues that we need urgent action on.
And how can people get in touch with you?
My email is kata@350.org.
And what would the ideal outcome be for you for these organizing efforts? What would you like to see happen?
I would like to see, and I think depends on kind of the moment in time in each community, and also, you know, the previous track record of organizing communication before me. But what makes me really happy is big, beautiful visuals, beautiful sounds, music, people singing together in order to amplify issues, and young people from impacted communities being empowered to talk about the ways that these issues affect us and them in each respective community. So that's what I would love to see.